Okay, we're back live. It's 3:52 p.m. Mr. Bellow.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Hobbs and board members. I think what we would prefer to proceed with the analysis, single subject issue, which haven't addressed yet anyway, but I don't think there's any problem with a single subject on this one, and with the setting of the title along the lines of the staff draft, and we will consider this issue concerning the phraseology of whether it's required under Tabor and can file a motion for a rehearing within 7 days.
Okay. Then let's take care of maybe the first issue, the single subject question. Any discussion about single subject compliance, or is there a motion? Ms. Eubanks?
I believe that proposed initiative number 95 contains a single subject and that the board should proceed to set a title.
Is that a motion?
I move it.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then we have the staff drafts displayed on the screen in the room. Mr. Bellow, did you want to make any any changes to the staff draft?
The only change that I would make is in line one, it says an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning an increase in the ratio of valuation. That should be rate. It's the rate of valuation for assessment. Ratio is another term in Gallagher. That's the ratio between commercial and residential. So definitely I think that should be changed to rate in both there and in line six, or actually I guess it's line seven of the submission clause.
Okay.
Other than that, this is pretty simple and straightforward, and we agree with it.
Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of that change, I agree that ratio is inappropriate. I was thinking perhaps we just remove that language completely and perhaps not even need rate of, that it's just an increase in the valuation for assessment for taxable property other than residential.
In fact, I think that's how it's phrased in the proposed change itself, which would say all taxable property other than residential real property shall be valued for assessment
right.
at.
And so whether or not even your proposed change, perhaps we wouldn't need, we'd just say an increase in the valuation for assessment?
Right. I would agree. I would recommend that.
Mr. Banks, would you want to make a motion?
Yes. I would move to strike the language on line one, ratio of.
So then the expression of single subject is begins concerning an increase in the valuation for assessment, et cetera.
Yes.
And with the same change made in the ballot title and submission clause.
Yes.
So I'll second that. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
And I never can remember what our our common practice is. Whether or not we spell out the 29%, 34%, or whether we could actually show it numerically with a percentage sign, whether that would be helpful to folks or not, I don't know.
I never remember either. To me, it's mostly a question of what is easiest to read.
I know from things like there's the University of Chicago Book of Style. I think that's a large book I think journalists use, and it says that when numbers are two-digit numbers or greater, they should be in numerical form rather than spelled-out form.
I find it easy to read numbers. I would prefer have this numerical, but again, I'm not sure what the proper practice is.
We've probably not been terribly consistent. So
I'll blame Dan.
Would have been consistent except for him.
Okay, on line three, I would strike 20-9% and substitute it with the number 29 and the percent symbol. And then also on the same line, strike 30-4%. Substitute the number 34 with the percent symbol. I would move that change.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
being a little bit more familiar with property tax than I am with health insurance. While I agree that the statement of the single subject is accurate, I just know that for most folks, they don't really have a clue of what this is really dealing with, and whether it would be helpful at the end of the phrase there on line 3, after we say property's actual value, to say for property tax purposes, just so that it puts it in context for folks. I mean, just from experience, most folks don't really understand the terminology of property tax. It's very detailed, and I just think to insert that language might be helpful. So after value,
I
don't know.
Other than residential,
I would have no objection to that. I think that's this is sort of a black art here.
So, right where you are, Ceci, to insert for property tax purposes. And I would move that change.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
And I'll just throw this out for consideration. I just wonder down in the next phrase on line 5 specifically, where it's talking about the revenues, appropriations, expenditures resulting from the increase, whether it's clear what the increase is referring to and whether it would be helpful to say the increase in valuation for assessment or the increase in the non-residential valuation for assessment or something. I don't know if the increase carries back up very well in terms of the statement of the single subject.
Kind of like the idea of inserting resulting from the increase in
valuation for assessment.
Yeah, and I don't know. Do you think non-residential?
Well, I mean, since that's all we're talking, that's all the measure talks about.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that that's so necessary, but it just seems at least valuation for assessment. So, after increase, to insert in valuation for assessment. I would move that change.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
So at this point, in terms of the Tabor, we'll leave it as is, and then
I think I'm happy leaving it for now, and seeing if the proponent, unless you feel strongly that we ought to go ahead. I mean, it is still the title board's responsibility. Don't get me wrong.
Well, no, I understand, and I mean it's a difficult issue. First of all, I think you're dealing with a statement that if you go the Tabor route, the Tabor ballot language route, it would be shall local taxes, because the state's prohibited from property tax, from imposing property tax, and so I think you're only dealing with local governments. But I made mention of this before that. Of those items listed in 4A that require voter approval under Tabor, that we know that at least one of those items, which was extension of an expiring tax under a court decision, does not require the mandatory ballot language. I can't recall ever whether through the legislature or a proposed initiative in the past that's proposed to change the valuation for assessment for any class of property. And so I don't know that there's any past precedent in terms of whether or not Tabor language was used for a similar type of measure in the past. I'm probably, because I'm sort of risk averse, I'd probably be more comfortable going with the Tabor language. But with the assurance that, you know, a motion for rehearing would be filed, I mean, if we don't have that assurance, then perhaps then we go ahead and set the Tabor language, and I think we could do it, although I think we're somewhat bound in terms of the starting language about shall local taxes be increased blank amount, you know, to fill in the blank annually. I think that we can then, you know, give some indication that it's, you know, by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution increasing the valuation for assessment for all taxable property other than residential, so it gets that concept across that that's what's resulting in the increase in tax. I don't think we have the ability to insert that earlier in the phrase based on the language that's included in Tabor. But if we want to defer the issue to, so that the proponents have more time to think about the format as well as the fiscal estimate, I'm happy to do that.
I think, you know, kind of looking over Tabor, hearing what Ms. Eubanks had to say, that this does require the Tabor language is my interpretation of it here. Obviously, that could be changed if somebody were to convince me otherwise, but hearing that the only case that we're aware of only did not deal with this issue, I think that we are then bound by it, by Tabor, and that we should use the Tabor language. I'm not sure from a procedure-wise for the title board whether we are obligated, therefore, to put it in, but I think that there's a real risk that this would this initiative would violate Tabor otherwise.
Well, you know, it does seem to me that this is more likely subject to the Tabor requirement, it's my personal preference to kind of go ahead and do that now, still with the understanding that there may be a motion for rehearing, and I'm open to proponents coming back and arguing that that's not correct, or that the amount that we put in is way too high or too high. But I'm a little more comfortable with going ahead and erring on the side of compliance with that Tabor requirement, and then entertaining some discussion next time that that's not necessarily true.
I understand.
Then
give me an opportunity to research it and we can test their numbers. Numbers.
Sure.
And then why don't we go ahead and at the beginning on line 7?
Well, actually, I think you want to make it change both in the ballot title as well as the ballot title and submission clause.
It certainly reads better in the question format, given what. But I think
we've been there before.
But let's start with line 1, then, if that's okay.
Sure. And I think, based on similar style on other measures, it would start out, local taxes shall be increased. And then I'll go ahead and, for discussion purposes, insert 577.3 million, well, with the dollar sign, thank you. So it's 577.3 million. Annually, by, and then make the N a lowercase N. And I don't know, and it would be, again, because I don't know that we've been in the position of setting Tabor language for local taxes as often as for state taxes, but whether or not it might be helpful after annually to say in the aggregate, since we're talking about a variety of local governments, you know, everything from municipalities, counties, special districts, school districts, to say
statewide aggregate, maybe?
Well, or however we want to do it, but whether, you know, to indicate that this is for, you know, across the board, statewide, an aggregate number rather than for any particular local government. And how we do that, I had thought of maybe, say, annually in the aggregate.
I think
but
that
if you
want to
say statewide.
I think you need to say statewide to kind of clarify what we're trying to let everybody know, that this is not 577
okay.
per
and
district.
And so just say statewide?
It's statewide
perhaps.
That this is
at least statewide by an amendment to the...
Actually, in, do you want to say in the statewide aggregate? Or do you want to just say statewide?
I don't know. Or in the aggregate statewide? I don't know what a statewide aggregate is.
Yeah.
I mean,
do you have a preference here?
Well, I was going to say that it sounds 2 points. One is in the aggregate statewide sounds like it would convey the meaning to people that this is an entire increase statewide in the aggregate. So, well, maybe I just said it that way: statewide in the aggregate. And the other point is, I really do think it's important to state that on non-residential property, because this, as I've stated before, if this Bruce or Tabor language is necessary in the, and we'll explore that in the next week or so, but if it's necessary, I think that it's actually more misleading than not if you don't specify that it's on non-residential property.
And I understand that issue. My concern is because the Constitution is so specific as to the beginning language that if we deviate from that in terms of indicating that it's for commercial property or non-residential property up in that first part of the phrase, I'm afraid that might be subject to challenge.
Well, my only point, and you know, I'm reading the same statute, and I don't think there's been any interpretation or the same amendment. There's, there probably hasn't been an interpretation of this, but it says ballot titles for tax or bond and debt increases shall begin. Shall taxes be increased, dot, dot, dot. And so I think that that leaves some room for discretion. And when the discretion in this case is being exercised in order to make it clearer by specifying, I guess I certainly would be willing to run that risk, that it's phrased in Tabor terms, but it adds that qualifier that for the purpose of notifying the electorate more clearly that it only applies to non-residential property taxes.
So what,
I think it's more reasonable.
What exactly are you suggesting? So I can get a feel for what we're talking about.
Local taxes shall be increased $517.3 million on non-residential property annually. Aggregate statewide, something to that effect.
Here's what I would suggest on that is, and the word annually is in the Tabor language, okay? So I wouldn't put anything before annually because that seems to get in the way of the language that's expressed there. So you would say local taxes shall be increased $577.3 million annually. And then we can either put in the statewide aggregate on non-residential property or on non-residential property in the statewide aggregate.
Either one sounds good. What do you think sounds best in terms of not being too verbose?
I think there's the same number of words,
yeah.
Probably, but...
Yes, I think that sounds like a good formula. Either of those is a good formulation.
And I'll ask Ms. Eubanks if that seems to fit with the requirements of the.
Yeah, I agree that you know, once you get past annually,
we're good.
Then you've got flexibility.
Okay.
And so how we do that, and whether you say annually on non-residential property in the aggregate statewide by an amendment, or flip it, I don't know that it makes.
Why don't I give a suggestion here, so we can for discussion purposes, so we can talk about it annually. On non-residential property, non-hyphen, yes, residential property, comma, in the, and I would say statewide aggregate, so I put aggregate after statewide. I think you missed a space there, by the way. Yeah. Looks like it. Just for discussion, and we can move it around if necessary, but that at least gets words up.
I think you need another comma after aggregate.
Yes, I agree.
You're setting off the phrase. Okay.
I'm not wedded to this. I just... Round. Mr. Vella, do you have a preference in any movement?
Phrase in the aggregate statewide. Directly to the amount of vibrance under seven. Preferable. 577 million.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yes. I don't think you need commas when you put it right after the annually.
Take the comma
take
out
all
after
the commas
aggregate.
Out. I think you can take all the commas out there, or both commas, I should say.
Agree. There shouldn't be one after property.
By doing it that way, it actually flows better.
I'm okay with it. I'm really not a big fan of putting this non-residential property phrase in there, since it goes on to say concerning an increase, basically, in the valuation for assessment on non-residential property. But, I'm okay with it. So, I mean, and we may revisit it anyway. So,
I wouldn't be surprised if we see this again.
Is there
I'll move the language, the changes to the title as put forward on the screen.
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
I would move the setting of the title as set forth on the screen with corresponding changes in the submission clause.
I'll second it. Fairly short. I think I will just go ahead and read it. Ceci has shown it on the screen with those changes. The title then would read, local taxes shall be increased $577.3 million annually in the statewide aggregate on non-HIFE residential property by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning an increase in the valuation for assessment of all taxable property other than residential real property from 29% to 34% of the property's actual value for property tax purposes, comma, in connection therewith, exempting additional revenues, comma, appropriations, comma, or expenditures resulting from the increase in valuation for assessment from all constitutional or statutory revenue or spending limitations. With the ballot title and submission clause being the same, but just beginning, shall local taxes be increased, etc., with a question mark at the end. Any further discussion?
Nothing further from the proponents.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 95. The time is 4:17 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go on to the next item on the agenda. 2007-2008, number 90, state sales tax for services for individuals with developmental disabilities. The time is 4:18 p.m. Mr. Stedman, are you representing proponents?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. My name is Pat Stedman on behalf of the proponents, and I'll let you know right away that it's the intent of the proponents to withdraw number 90.
Okay.
I don't know if you needed me to sign up on the sheet or not. I'm signed up on the 90.
Okay. So number 90 is withdrawn.
I don't think we're going to argue with you.
No, this
there's no technicalities we're going to argue about on that one.
I know it's been a long day, and you got off to a rough start. So.
This is a Christmas present. Thank you. then we'll go to the next agenda item, number 91, same caption. Mr. Stedman on number 91.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Pat Stedman, representing the proponents of the measure. And, I don't know if you'd like me to make a brief statement as to single subject or where you'd like me to start, but I can launch right in there.
Is there anything, I guess, you know, the main things I want to make sure that the board understands the measure, and it's somewhat lengthy, but if there's anything that you can tell us that might aid our understanding, be happy. I mean, you've been through a review and comment, sure. You may know some of the issues and pitfalls.
The measure proposes an increase in the state sales and use tax of 0.1% in the first year and an additional 0.1% in the second year for the purpose of funding long-term services for persons with developmental disabilities, and the intent of the proponents to end the waiting list for such services for those affected populations. The measure is rather detailed in that there's a number of provisions concerning the collection and the mechanics, how that tax is going to be handled and transferred into a fund that will be created for the purpose of paying for long-term services for persons with developmental disabilities. This is actually modeled after a proposal that was considered during a legislative interim committee last fall. Using the exact same mechanism there, we just made a few changes. For instance, a phase-in of an increase not quite of the magnitude that that proposal proposed last year. And it, with corresponding exemptions from spending and revenue limits, sorts of details, some of which I know is reflected in the staff draft of the time consideration.
Let's see if there's any questions from the board. Ms. Eubanks.
Mr. Stedman, in light of your statements about the purpose of the measure, can you tell me, and I'm referring specifically on page 7 of the measure, section 11, dealing with the state use tax, what the repeal of the current use tax effective July 1st, 2009 has to do with your stated purpose of the measure?
And Ms. Eubanks, you zeroed right in on an issue that came to our attention when we received the staff draft titles yesterday, and something I just figured out this morning. This is actually a technical error we've made in this draft, and one of the questions the proponents would have is it possible to correct a technical error at this stage, specifically on line of that paragraph B in section 11, striking the words in caps, but prior to July 1, 2009. Because that's repealing, and this is an issue that arose during the review and comment hearing, and the proponents made a very clear record of no intent to repeal the existing state use tax. And if you'll turn to the next page or there in the new paragraphs that are added, you'll also see further evidence of that intent, where the additional increments are described as being in addition to the existing tax in paragraph B.
Well, the board has some limited authority to allow technical corrections in the text of a measure, but I think we've viewed them as instances where the measure, you know, is obvious on its face what the correction needs to be. You know, a misspelled word, an error in numbering successive paragraphs, things that were obvious on their face, that they were just typographical errors. So the question for me would be, is this an obvious typographical error?
And, you know, I'll give you my pitch, which is that, that again, we've made a clear record in our intent from the review and comment hearing that we would not disturb the existing use tax. And there is that language in both the new paragraph B.3 and B.5 that obviously references that ongoing tax in paragraph B. And this was a technical error.
You know, and I do appreciate it's a technical error. I'm just not sure it sounds pretty substantive. I mean, it may be inadvertent, technical, unintended, but I'm having a little trouble seeing it as the kind of typographical error that's plain on its face that we can correct. And that's kind of been the limit of the authority that the Supreme Court allowed us, I think. I'm just a little nervous about this one. But I'm looking for some other thoughts as well. This one seems, you know, seems to go beyond what I'm comfortable with.
I'm very sympathetic to the problem, as a lawyer and doing things like this myself and filings with the courts. However, my problem is that I think it is substantive, and the question would be, is the mistake leaving the sunset provision in, or is the mistake not correcting the other sections to fit with the sunset? And I understand what the record you've created elsewhere, but that's not in front of us. And that makes it hard for me to view this as other than taking testimony and relying on the reliability of the witnesses and making a determination.
I can also offer for you that the proposed fiscal impact statement that the Office of State Budget and Planning provided, I believe, also viewed this as something that was technically incorrect. From our, you know, it's two paragraphs on paper. It doesn't really tell you much about how they arrived at their figures. But our own projections of the additional revenue that would be generated by this measure are very much in line with the OSPB fiscal note. Clearly, I don't think either existing use tax. So if that helps with your consideration at all.
Well, okay. So I mean, you know, on the one hand, OSPB did not recognize or did not assume a repeal of the use tax. The drafter of the staff draft did. You know, both are relevant, but. It still seems substantive to me. Still open to trying to find an argument. You were so nice to us on the preceding agenda.
Well, if there's any, I can do the curry favor.
And I guess I'm trying to think, and I don't know whether it's appropriate for me to do this. I'm trying to think also where that leaves proponents. The deadline for resubmitting to legislative staff having passed. On the other hand, If this was something that could have been made in the drafts as submitted to the Secretary of State, I'm wondering if you can still resubmit to the Secretary of State without having to resubmit. In other words, if again, I'm a little confused about what happened here, but if this was something that could have been corrected, you know, they were changes in response to the comments at the review and comment hearing. Then maybe it's something that still could be resubmitted. And I think,
well, that's certainly an option we'd be interested in pursuing. Been weighing various options throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
And are pursuing some others as well. Clearly, I think the simplest four or five words there.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Eubanks?
I think I am feeling the same discomfort in going so far as to say that this is a technical error that we can correct. I can, from just my ability of looking at the review and comment memos, having talked to the attorney that from our office that conducted that meeting, that I do believe that this change was in response to questions and a discussion that occurred, that the version that was submitted at review and comment actually took a little bit different approach. The issue was raised, and I think this was done in direct response, and so that may prove to be a better avenue than as actually changing the text. And I mean, I equate it back to an earlier discussion on a measure that had internal conflicting effective dates. I don't know that I would have been any more comfortable if they had said, well, obviously one was a mistake and could you please correct it. I'm not sure I would be comfortable there, and as well as I'm not comfortable removing the language here, but at least it's my understanding that this language, which was not in the version submitted for review and comment, was added in direct response to a discussion and questions raised during the review and comment meeting.
And just help me out to understand a little bit about the process. What does that do for allowing the proponents to go back, fix it, and bring it back to us? Does it give them that ability with the date having passed?
I think so, from what I've heard, and is that the deadline for filing with the Secretary of State is May 9th for the last meeting of the title board on May 21st. So I think if I'm understanding it correctly, and Mr. Kneiser seems to be nodding affirmatively, that based on our understanding is that the drafts could be resubmitted for title setting by prior to the Secretary of State's May 9th deadline.
Yes, I think that's correct. If I could just add one point. The courts have had an opportunity to review the question of whether or not changes were made in consistent with comments from the staff. And I think the courts have been pretty strict in saying that, you know, you have to show that the comments were made in conjunction the changes were made in conjunction with the comments from the staff. I would have some concern about the sustainability of removing the phrase at this meeting today, because I do think it would be a substantive change. I think the safer way to go is to just resubmit the draft, letting us know that the comments were made in response to a direct comment from the staff, and that would actually be cleaner.
May I ask a question?
For you, sure.
If that were the avenue that we pursued, we need to draw this measure from consideration for these purposes today, or would it be possible to continue with the title setting if the board, you know, finds jurisdiction to set the title today, and still avail ourselves of this?
Good question, and I'm trying to remember if we've got any precedent for that. Certainly, the cleaner thing to do is to pick one or the other. That if the measure you want the board to decide on is not this one, to withdraw this one and resubmit the actual text that you do want to submit.
And withdrawal of this here today still allows number 91 filed before 3 p.m. on Friday.
Yes, and I'm trying to, you know, I wish I could remember this a little better. Several years ago, we got into what might have been a similar situation where we numbered like a 90, might become 91A. I'm trying to remember why that happened, but it might have been this situation where we had more than one submittal of the same basic measure. You know, I can't say for sure that you could not proceed with title setting on this one as is and still resubmit it, but there's something that seems a little bit inconsistent about doing that.
Well, and I'll be quite frank, one of the other options we pursued is earlier today we resubmitted new measure with those few words subtracted. to the Office of Legislative Counsel in hopes that perhaps we could bypass the review and comment process there, which normally takes 2 weeks, with their memo that says all of our comments were made on your previous draft and we have no further comments. That before 3 p.m. on Friday, we actually have a brand new measure with a new number. And we've already begun pursuing that, although it's unclear whether that will work. Legislative Council staff and Office of Legislative Counsel tells me they take up to 72 hours to produce that letter saying we have no further comments. Something that could be done before Friday at 3 in this instance. So that's just one of our other alternatives. But I'm interested in the other that.
Mr. Banks?
One other option in terms of if we proceed to talk about this measure, I believe that if we were to find, perhaps because it includes a repeal of the existing use tax, so that the measure doesn't contain a single subject, that if we make that finding, then I believe the proponents have the ability to take out what is causing the single subject problem and resubmit. Isn't that also part of the process? I think under the Constitution that they can come back to the title board.
Are you talking about the single subject provision in Article
right.
5, Section
that,
1?
That they can.
That I don't know the answer to.
No. Well, Maury, you're supposed to know these things. That's why you're here.
Brain cells are dying quicker than I'll admit to.
In Article 5, Section 1, Subsection 5.5 says, if a measure contains more than one subject such that a ballot title cannot be fixed that clearly expresses a single subject, no title shall be set and the measure shall not be submitted to the people. In such circumstance, however, the measure may be revised and resubmitted for the fixing of a title without the necessity of review and comment on the revised measure, unless the revision involves more than the elimination of provisions to achieve a single subject, or unless the title board determines that the revisions are so substantial that such review and comment is in the public interest.
I think that language would allow.
But I think you'd still have to resubmit
by
the Friday to make the May 21st.
But we would be resubmitting number 91 in revised form.
If we were to pursue and find, I mean, I don't know. Mm-hmm.
And let me just clarify how I hear that so the proponents understand. That would not require going back to legislative legal services, but would merely require them striking the language and submitting it to the Secretary of State? Is that
yes, but I also believe that the option that Mr. Hobbs outlined in terms of withdrawing this measure and resubmitting it, whether it's numbered as 91A, also is an option that doesn't involve going back for review and comment.
But I guess my question about Mr. Hobbs's
that's where I would be going because
I have a question about Mr. Hobbs's suggestion in that the finding by this board that there is that it violates a single subject is set forth in the Constitution is clear. I'm not sure. I'd be curious what the authority is to support the other option of withdrawal and resubmittal without going back to legislative legal services.
Well, it's also constitutional.
And I figured it was, and I figured you would point me in the right direction.
I just
want the proponents to at least have support for whatever path they take. And I don't want them to get caught up in this.
I'm trying to remember whether it's it may actually be in the statutory provision on
initiative statute. You know, okay. One option the board may want to consider is to is to vote on single subject. If it determines that the measure contains more than one single subject, then the proponents may have the option of either using the approach under the constitutional provision or, you know, resubmitting it in accordance with the statutory provision.
But But don't they have to withdraw it under the statutory provision so that before we reach the single subject issue? Because we've triggered the constitutional provision.
Well, the statutory provision on review and comment, which, I mean, review and comment has a constitutional basis in Section 1 of Article 5. But then the statutory provision, and I'm just reading in part, it says after the public meeting, so after the review and comment meeting, but before submission to the Secretary of State for title setting, the proponents may amend the petition in response to some or all of the comments of the Directors of Legislative Council and Office of Legislative Legal Services or their designees. If any substantial amendment is made to the petition other than an amendment in direct response to the comments, the amended petition shall be resubmitted. So what it's saying is that if you're making something in direct response to review and comment, and I believe that was sort of the process here that the proponents took on this measure, is that they made changes after review and comment and filed with the title board. It's only if you're making some, you've decided to make another change, a substantive change that isn't in direct response to an issue raised during review and comment, then they're required to go back and start over again with review and comment. And so I think by what Mr. Hobbs is suggesting is that by withdrawing now, then you're still in this time period, the measures between after review and comment, but before filing with the title board. And they can make, again, they're making the change to conform to the comment, original comment made during review and comment, then they refile. And I think the argument is that's not a change, because it's a change in direct response to a question raised during review and comment, that's not something that the statute requires to go back through review and comment.
And my apprehension about that course of action is the phrase in the statute that Ms. Eubanks read that says before submitting.
Right. Whether
really this has been submitted.
And not only that,
whether we can vacate that somehow and go back a step, I'm unclear on that point.
So what path do you want to take?
Actually, I find the most comfort in the language in the Constitution. Obviously, should the board find these extra four or five words here to constitute a separate subject, have a constitutional right to delete those.
Yes, I was just going to say, just to add even, make the mud, the waters even more muddy, you know, there is a substantial compliance component to some of the procedures under the initiative code, but again, the board may want to consider voting on the single subject so that the proponents have the option of which route they want to take.
If we go that route, then have they truly submitted? I mean, does that eliminate the option under the statute?
It may. I think there's a stronger argument that it does. But
at that point, can't withdraw it as not being submitted.
You know, this is really an issue of first impression. I think the real issue is whether or not, you know, the courts are going to view that particular requirement as absolutely mandatory or as directory. In light of the fact that they do want to give the benefit of the doubt to the proponents and make the process as liberal as possible. But unfortunately, this is an issue of first impression, at least to my recollection. So.
I'm a little concerned, I'm still trying to think this through, that there's maybe some risks in any approach. But I guess one way I was looking at this idea of withdrawing now and resubmitting is that is not based, I mean, one way to look at it in my mind is not so much based on any constitutional statutory process, but to make it possible for proponents generally, if they make a mistake in the versions or the text they submit to the Secretary of State, to have a way of correcting it. I mean, I'm concerned that I don't want to be basing anything on an idea that once you hand it over to the Secretary of State, even if you made a mistake, you can't do anything about it. I'm viewing this as something that there really was a mistake here in what was submitted to the Secretary of State. The intention was to respond to the comments and review and comment. And it just the wrong draft got submitted. And in general, I mean, if we had not started title board consideration of this measure, I would have guessed that maybe proponents could, and I don't know whether it's happened, could have come back to the Secretary of State, you know, a day later or an hour later and say, oh, made a mistake, gave you the wrong versions, here's the corrected version, and maybe nobody would have noticed. And that, so part of me is motivated by wanting proponents to have a way of simply correcting an error in what they submitted, and as long as, you know, and having that taken care of. A little concerned, I guess, if you take it to the next step, if they don't want to correct it, withdraw it and correct it, and we make a decision, is there any risk that opponents might say, that's, you know, you can't have it both ways? I mean, you can't, you know, submit it and have the title board find that it's a violation of single subject and then start over again. In part, now I'm sort of concerned the other side is that, is there, what's the limit to that? Can you always, I mean, can you get a title set and then resubmit and go back, rethink review and comment hearing and say, you know, I've got another idea on how we could do that draft and get a better title. You know, it's still written response to review and comment. Maybe we ignored them before, but now we want to revise our measure and continually make changes to a draft and constantly come back to the title board. Now, I guess the protection against that is the statutory or constitutional language that says that the title board can always send it back for review and comment. I don't know. I'm just, you know, I'm just.
The other limits to that would be the third Wednesday.
True.
Although I understand the trouble that you have. Choices. I was actually prepared to argue that that was not a single subject violation, and perhaps mm-hmm. I should turn those arguments on my heads.
Well, I partly was taking into account the possibility that we may find that it's not a single subject violation. I mean, I don't know for sure. But what if we were to set a title? I guess that was part of my scenarios that I'm trying to think through. If we set a title, but you don't want that title, I don't think, because then it's for a measure.
We have no intent to repeal the existence.
Yeah. I mean, the only benefit of going forward right now is that if we find that it is a violation of single subject, then you've got an additional method of correcting it. Although I'm just still wondering if by going down that road, as long as that works, I mean, as long as it is true that you can then follow that method, remove a provision, resubmit it without the violation of single subject, and hope that the title board doesn't think that there's some other than substantive effect that requires review and comment. And right off, I don't anticipate that, but I'm just saying that the constitutional provision for fixing a single subject problem does expressly say the title board could feel uncomfortable and want review and comment anyway. I always picture that what the drafters intended by that was that if you have A and B and they're literally side by side and you send it to the title board and they say, no, that's clearly two subjects, you could take out one of those, and that's okay. But where it's a little more complicated, where there might be more of an interconnection between the two subjects, it might be hard to uproot one of them without having some substantive effect on the other. And that may not be the problem here. It may be easily removable. The second subject, if there is one, may be easily removable, and it may fit squarely within the constitutional provision, and there's no risk. I'm just trying to think through if there are any risks, ultimately. So it's up to you. If you want to...
On the horns of a dilemma.
I mean, and I'm probably making too big a deal out of the making it too complicated.
have a moment?
Sure.